What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Remember Country Music Podcast. As usual, I'm Kyle Corbelis, and listen, honestly, today I'm really excited to sit down and talk to a fellow music lover and a guy that I think is really cool and has a really cool story in terms of how he makes his music and the type of sound that he's pushing out. And I'm not going to lie, this week's been a little stressful. It's been a stressful week, and I'm excited that I get to do this tonight. So I get to hang out with Mitch Bradford today. He's based out of LA, super cool. And I'm just excited to kind of get to know him and get to know his music a little bit and why he does what he does. So Mitch, thank you for coming on the show and hanging out with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, of course. So kind of like how I like to start things, and I think that you're a really good case in this scenario, is that I just kind of want to know where your love for music started. Like, why do you make the type of music that you do? And I love to ask this question because sometimes it's super cut and dry. Like, this is where I grew up. This is the type of music I listen to. This is why I play it. But sometimes it's a little bit different. Like we've been talking about off recording here. Like, I'm from New Jersey, but I love rock music and I love country music. And, you know, those things blend really well for me, but the way I, you know, walk around day to day and go to work, you would never guess that unless I told you. Right. So I love asking this question, and I think that your sound is cool and different. And I want to know kind of what you're listening to and how you found yourself, what you're doing now.
Yeah. I think for me, it started in, I played in bands growing up. I honestly started with the piano. I started playing piano when I was young, and I took piano lessons. And then at a certain point, I was like, man, piano is not cool.
I also did the exact same thing.
And so I picked up a guitar and I started playing guitar, and I've never had a guitar lesson. I just started playing. Sure. It was the days of the early internet. You could get a tab for anything online, and I started playing guitar.
Yeah.
And then played in a bunch of bands with friends in high school. And then transferred into college, kind of at another level. Played in bands in college. And then more people started showing up to shows. And then right after college, I started getting kind of really serious about trying to take it to another level. Mm-hmm. Trying to improve my craft as a singer and a songwriter. And just, that's the journey I've been on. Just keep leveling up.
I love it. You got to keep growing. You got to keep challenging yourself to grow, right? I think that's, you know, the name of the game. It's interesting because you grew up, you're from Texas, right? You're from Brownsville, Texas. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. Small town, Texas.
So is that, and like I said, currently you're in LA, which is probably, I would imagine, two different sides of the spectrum and maybe a little bit of a shock when you first went there. I don't know. I want to get into that, but, you know, like, what were you kind of listening to? What were some of those things? Because I always talk about the fact that, you know, what I was listening to, you know, 15 years ago is not what I'm listening to now, because what I'm listening to now, I always told myself wasn't cool because all my friends said it wasn't cool. But now it's the coolest thing in the world, right? So, like, what were you listening to when you were growing up and playing in these bands? You know, where were your influences lying?
It's interesting. When I was a kid, I was way deeper into, you know, heavy rock like AC/DC, Guns sure. N' Roses, and punk rock. Nice. So, you know, obscure nice. Bands like the Vandals and another band called the Sloppy Meat Eaters, and then some of the kind of alternative new rock that started coming out in the early 2000s, like the Hives, the Strokes, the White Stripes. So that was my core. And then the movement to country music, or like my own change towards country music, just developed over time. Started listening to country deeper in college, got into like Jason Isbell and cool. Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson. And I'd moved away from Texas and I realized like, oh, all this stuff that I was surrounded by in Texas is actually closer to my identity than I thought it was.
Yeah.
And so I started really embracing it and kind of going deep into it.
Yeah. And I think that's cool. You know why? Because like, I'm always a strong believer in the fact that, like, it's no secret when I tell people I love country music, it's always like, why, right? I mean, I get it, right? I get it. Like, where I'm from, I understand that it doesn't really make sense. But then you start asking people, like, well, what do you like to listen to? And they're like, well, when I think about country music, I like Johnny Cash. I think Johnny Cash is really good. I think Willie Nelson's really good. I think John Denver's really good. And they start naming off all these names, like these old names, right? And you're like, okay, so I don't understand your issue with country music if those are the guys that you like. Like, these are some pioneers, right? These are some trailblazers. These are the guys that have set up so many people for straight success. And you're saying you don't like the genre, but you like these artists. And I think that that's important for people to recognize, because, you know, there's so much out there in the world of country music. And I think that you're a great example of that. You know, country music, I always say, is a filing cabinet, and there's a lot of subfiles to this giant filing cabinet. And you fall somewhere in between there, right? There's somewhere in that sandwich that you fall in. And like I always say, well, I don't always say this. This is my second time saying this. Someone called me out for it. And I'm going to say it again, because I think it's a great metaphor or comparison, whatever you want to call it. Country music is not a turkey sandwich. It isn't boring. There's a lot of stuff inside this sandwich of country music, and it's not just turkey and American cheese. So I think it's cool. I think it's cool that you found that stuff after you moved out of Texas and when you moved to a new environment, right? And you were like, man, what was I missing my whole life? And I think that it's cool that you throw all these influences. When you say bands like the Vamps, and like, I think like the 1975, right? Like, do you listen to them? I think that they're very like groovy and cool and different. And I listened to them in college a little bit. And when I listen to stuff that you play, like, that's kind of what I'm getting out of it a little bit. And I think that it's cool.
Yeah, it's interesting. Somebody like showed me a 1975 song last night, and I made a mental note where I was like, I need to get deeper into this band. This band's actually extremely good. So
yeah,
I'm familiar with a few of their tunes, but I need to go deeper into them.
You know what? It's funny, because so when I went to college, and I'm sure you probably relate to this in some level. When I went to college, I was probably like 2 years into my, like, what I call my my music journey of like what I got bit by like the country music bug at some point late in high school, right? So when I went to college, I was still trying to like explore that, and there was so much ahead of me, and it was great, right? This road was empty, and I just had to follow it. And I get to college, and I'm like, man, I mean, I didn't really go. I'm in New England now. Like, no one here cares about this stuff. And a lot of my friends that I became friends with loved bands like the 1975. And one of my friends literally taught himself guitar just by listening to the 1975 songs. And he's great. He's a really good guitar player now. And in 4 years, he went from not even being able to play a chord to like play full songs. Like, he's great, right? And I'm listening to this band, and I'm like, I mean, they're really cool. They're vibey. They're cool. Like, they're different. You would never have caught me listening to them prior to college. And I just think that it's cool that they're like, what is that one song by Sex? That's a great song by them. Great song. There's a ton of really good songs by them.
You'll have to send me a list, because it's next on my, it's no joke, next on my list.
I'll just send you the records that I like, and you can just go and listen to them that way. I think I have like two that I really like, and I think Chocolate's another song that I love. I'll just like go through and send you a bunch that I like a lot. But I think it's cool that that's your influence, to be honest with you. I think that that's not something I've heard, and it's interesting. So let's talk about this decision here. And this is something I am curious about. And you graduate college, right? And you're playing music in college, and you're getting a crowd, and you're enjoying it, and it's something that you want to do. With country music influences and with these other influences, why not make a decision to go to Music City, and why go to LA or stay in LA?
It's a great question. I've been to Nashville a number of times. I played some venues there. I love Nashville. Played the Bluebird, actually.
Nice. That's one of my favorites.
So no hate on Nashville at all. I think Nashville's super rad. My own journey was super circuitous. Like, post-college, I was in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I played music there, played every venue possible in town. And then I moved to New York, lived there for like 2 or 3 years, put out a record when I was in New York. And then eventually just, I was traveling out to California a little bit for work, and I was like, man, people are really happy out here. So yeah, I moved out to LA like 6-7 years ago, and it really just felt like home. And then musically, it just felt, and again, no hate towards Nashville, but LA has this incredible music scene where everything is possible. And when it comes to country music, it's got like 1 foot in the sort of Bakersfield, Buck Owens, old school world, but also another foot in Jackson Browne, Tom Petty, and the Eagles.
Yeah.
Which is like my vibe, and kind of just seemed in terms of where I was being directed by the muse, you know, quote the muse, was like, go in that direction. So yeah, LA was a great fit, and kind of just feels perfectly aligned with what I'm interested in writing and creating right now.
You know what? I respect it. And I respect it for two reasons. I think that you're right. As great as Nashville is, and this is, Nashville is not just country music. That's something really important to recognize. It's not at all. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff going on there. Obviously here, that's kind of where my focus is in terms of what I'm listening to, but I think that it's cool that you went to a spot where there's country music influences, but you also are allowing yourself to explore and not hit that roof, right? Like you're allowing yourself to go past that roof and maybe you befriend someone who plays like, I don't know, like pop of some sort, right? And you can use those influences to influence your own music, but you might not find that in Nashville. You might find someone who's playing hockey tonks, but like that might not be the thing for you. So it just doesn't work. So you just have to find your blend. And that doesn't mean you can't go to Nashville and like explore, right? And then go back to California when you're done. You absolutely can do that. And I think that's the beauty of it, right? So I respect the fact that you decided to go and take these California influences and bring them into your own music. Cause a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people think that the only way to make it in music, especially if you want to make it in country music, is Nashville. And that's not always true. I mean, it's sometimes, you know, it's good to be there, but that doesn't mean it's a end all be all. You know what I mean? You can make it anywhere as long as you, you know, stay true to yourself and do what you want to do.
1,000%. Yeah. I love Nashville. I want to definitely spend more time there. You know, LA has this cool, like singer songwriter tradition too.
Sure.
That's really amplified. And that was part of the attraction.
Cool.
Was like, you know, there's some of that Joni Mitchell, Jackson Browne singer songwriter vibe out here as well. So I liked what you said. It's definitely a blend of a lot of different.
Yeah. And I think that as an artist, you have to allow yourself to that, right? Like why pigeonhole yourself? And I'm not an artist, but as someone who's from as someone on the outside, I mean, it's cool when an artist goes and take risks. I mean, not everyone's going to love it, right? And some people are going to love it. And that's the beauty of it. And that's why you don't do it expecting for, you do it because you want people to say, maybe that's not for me. And then you want a big group of people to say, this is for me. So I don't know. I think that's cool that you're allowing yourself to be a part of the melting pot that is California and, you know, exploring your musical journey through that. I think that's important and pretty awesome. So kudos to you. I think there's a lot of people who don't do that, and kudos to you. I think it's cool. Excuse me. So what are some of your favorite spots in LA? This is kind of interesting. Are there any like, so I don't know much about California. My cousin lives in San Diego, loves it, moved there, said never coming home, never came home. Good for him. Everyone's happier there, right? Like what are some of your favorite spots to play music at, to eat, whatever it might be? Like what are some of your favorite spots in California that make California, California?
Oh man, I'll send you a list after. I mean, there's so many great spots to eat. There's a great probably one of the greatest spots to eat. It's a place called Joy.
Cool.
It's like Asian, East Asian food. I live in Highland Park, so it's east side of Los Angeles, kind of near Dodger Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's your vibe, I like the beer there too. That's good.
After work, you gotta do it. Why not? I'm not saying you can. I say go ahead. Why not? It's 6 o'clock here in New Jersey. It's all right.
There you go. That's right.
Won't kill me.
Musically, Hotel Cafe is kind of where it's at. So if you're new to town and you want to get connected to the music community, Hotel Cafe is where to go. There's two stages, singer songwriters and bands of all types. And that would be the spot I'd highly recommend.
See, those are places that I like. I like places that just, because they're small venues and you get to go there and you might be able to discover someone that you just don't know. I think that's cool. You just get to walk in and sit down. I mean, you know, that's cool because it allows you to just, because I'm sure you go there as just a listener and you sit down, right? And you say, oh, who are you? Hey, my name is Mitch. Like, I also play music, right? That's a cool way to make connections.
Yeah, it's kind of the hub for, like, if you want to join a band, show up there on Monday nights. If you want to perform, I mean, get your name out there first, and then eventually you'll find yourself on one of those stages. And kind of a lot of good LA musicians came out of there, like Blake Mills did a lot there. Sarah Bareilles did a lot there.
I was a huge Sarah Bareilles guy when I was a kid. Man, listening to stuff all the time. I don't know why, but my iPod was very weird. Like, I had the little iPod Nano, and I had a ton of stuff. She was on there. I remember her being on there. I don't know. Call me crazy. I don't know. I thought she was great. I still think she's good.
Yeah, she's got some great tunes, you know?
Yeah. I love it. Are you just side note, are you a Dodger fan? Like, when you moved to LA, did you, like, become a Dodger fan? Or, like, did you become, like, any LA sports fans?
Yeah, I'm a big Dodgers fan. Yeah.
Really? Okay. All right. I'm a big Yankee fan. It's, I don't know, you know, big league teams, whatever. All right. All right.
Yeah. What do you think happened this year to the Yankees? Because
hey. All right. We have some issues. We're working them out. Anthony Rizzo resigned. We're okay. We'll live.
Gotcha.
Aaron Judge needs to come back. And then once that happens, some other stuff needs to happen. But what happened with the Dodgers, dude? What happened with the Dodgers?
Yeah, I think it was like a mindset issue, honestly, because we were stacked with talent and we were winning so many games. And then,
dude, the Dodgers are the best team of the decade. Best team of the decade. Don't even. Best team of the decade. And if Clayton Kershaw doesn't come back, which he might not, you're still stacked, which is sad. I hate that. That really bothers me. But, you know, I mean, it's the name of the game, right? It's the name of the game. It happens. But, listen, I was really pulling for the Padres this year, but that's just because I wanted to see the little guys win. And I think that the whole playoff, they reformatted the whole playoff. And I'm not going to get into it because I spend all day looking at this stuff, but they reformatted the whole playoff. And the only reason why the Phillies and the Padres made it as far as they did was because they reformatted the whole playoff, which I think is cool because you just want to see the little guy win. But,
You think they did that to introduce, like, more volatility? Kind of.
You know why I think they did? I honestly think that they did it because it allows that underdog to make a comeback. Like, you know, the one thing I think about the baseball season, and honestly, I'm curious on your take here, is that if you go on a run, right, and you are a well above 500 team at the All-Star break, you're probably making it to the playoffs unless something ridiculous happens. But if you're someone like the Phillies or the Orioles, that's a good example too, who, like, had a comeback and it came down to the wire, you know, without this new format, they're not making it in, but with the extra team, you're making it in by the skin of your teeth. But once you make it in, it all starts a clean slate. Doesn't matter. Right. So, I mean, I think that's cool. A lot of people disagree. A lot of people hate it. I think that's great. Honestly, I really do. For the game, it's cool to see the Phillies in the World Series. I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
I think it keeps you sharp all the way through. And I don't know if you're a college football fan, but I hope they go to a similar model in college football.
I am a college football fan.
Nice.
I agree. So I am, you'd be surprised. I am a really big Army fan from the military academy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My family has had season tickets for since I was a little kid. So I go to all the games, all the home games. I love the atmosphere. I stand by this and say that is the greatest place to watch college football. It's super cool. It's very unique. We had a lot of rough years when I was a kid, and then we got really good, and now we're kind of shitty again. But, and you know, we'll never see Army in the national championship, but I love college football. I think it's fun, and it's a bunch of kids that love doing what they're doing. So I don't know. I'm a big component of college sports, basketball too. I'm not a basketball guy, but I watch March Madness every year just because it's a bunch of guys that love to play basketball.
Yeah, I got similar. I don't watch as much college basketball, but a huge college football fan. And I love that aspect of it too. Like, right? It's amateur athletes, there's kind of passion and drive. The games are emotional. And because it's amateurs, like anything could happen. You know?
It's like it's a weird line between amateurs, and there's a large professionalism in college, Division I college football. But right. You're right, there's a total amateur hour to it as well. So it's kind of cool that it bridges the gap, because you get mistakes, but you also get guys that are insanely good. You know what I hate? And I don't know if you feel the same way, but I am a young looking guy. You know, I'm under 6 foot, and I look at some of these dudes and I go, like, man, I'm older than all of them pretty much. And they all look like they got a good 5 years on me. And it's ridiculous. I'm like, are you kidding me? Well, like, where did the gene pool go wrong with me? Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. These guys are ridiculous.
Yeah, it is weird to watch somebody who's like 20 and they're on their way to making maybe $10 million a year. And then you think, you like look at them and you think they're older, and they're actually, you know, 5-10 years younger than you or something.
It's so like ridiculous. And I hate every time I come to terms with it, I hate it, because I'm like, dude. I mean, at some point in college, I was like, no. These guys are the same age as me. Like, it makes sense, but it makes no sense, because they can bench double my weight, and they're going to go on to make all this money. And I'm just like trying to get an A in a class, trying to get a degree. And that's it.
Do you play any sports outside of,
No, I grew up wrestling my entire life, and I did that in high school, and I stopped everything when I went to college, and basically stopped working out too. But I work out again because, you know, I guess I got the competitive drive again. But I stopped everything. I decided that I was done. I didn't want to be an athlete anymore. You know, I'm athletic. I don't really do anything competitive. So that was it for me. Did you, growing up in Texas, did you play football or anything like that? Was that a big deal?
It was a big deal. I didn't play. I played, like, you know, flag football when I was young. I didn't play.
As did I. Big flag.
I was always trying to, like, start bands, and, you know, I was involved in that scene.
Nice.
Trying to start rock bands, trying to, you know, extracurriculars like that. But we would go. It was a small town in Texas, so we would go to the games and root on our friends. And
sure.
They were a big deal for sure.
Do you see, like, when you look back at your upbringing, right? Like, when you were in school, was there a lot of music going on? Were there a lot of people who were, like, interested in music and that wanted to start bands? Because people have said that to me. My school was not like that. We did not have that. And I'm always interested to hear when people were like, yeah, like, believe it or not, like, there was a lot of people who really wanted to, you know, be a part of a band and be a rock star and go play at the local place or whatever it may be. And did you find that when you were growing up?
You know, I think it was probably maybe similar to your experience. It was a small group of us, but the group that were involved in music, we were really passionate about it. So we were always getting together and playing, and people were really cool with us. So they would book us to come play their party or their bar. And honestly, with the adult lens, like, I now think I wish we would have practiced harder. We were very interested in, like, playing music and drinking and playing music and, you know, having a good time.
Yeah.
And now you're kind of like, man, we had some good, you know, players. We had some good pickers. If only we would have been a little more serious, we could have got some things going early on.
Do you remember the first show that you played?
First show I played. I started playing in, like, punk bands with a bunch of people. And somehow somebody gave me a bass, because, like, a bass was, and if you learned how to play bass, no, obviously nobody wanted to play bass. So, like, somebody gave me a bass when I was like 10 or 12, and I learned how to play it. And then I got invited to be in this punk band. It was basically like a Blink 182 ripoff.
Great.
Punk.
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal. And the guys were older than me, so they were like 15, 16, and I was like 10, 11, 12. That, so I'm playing with, and, you know, there's a big difference between, like, being 15, 16 and being 11. There's a lot that goes on.
Sure. Those are some pretty critical years in between there.
So I think, you know, I remember going to a show. It was a punk show. I played bass with this group called Cap. I think it was called Capsule 46. It was clearly like a Blink 182 ripoff. It was a punk show in the middle of nowhere. And because my parents were worried about what was going to happen at the show, I think my dad drove me to the show and like sat in the back and kind of, you know, took in that. He was really cool. He just let it all sort of transpire. But yeah, man, I think that was one of my first shows, punk show in like Mercedes, Texas, random town in Texas.
That's awesome. I you know for a fact your dad's sitting back there in the corner and he's like, what is my son doing? He's like playing. You know that you were definitely intimidated by these like starting to be men that are down the stage and you're just like, man, I'm going to go back to sixth grade after this and they're going to go to high school and do their thing. But I mean, that's got to be cool for you. Like that's a super early experience. And then that gets you comfortable with crowds and that gets you comfortable playing in a public place in front of a bunch of people that you may or may not know. I don't know. I think that's a great way to start. And I, you know, there's a lot of people that wish they started earlier because it would only help them now. I mean, the fact that you started that young, then went all through high school and all through college, playing music, playing out, playing in front of people. All that does is, and I made this comparison a few weeks ago, and it was like, imagine if a kid goes to high school and is a football player, we'll use that, and goes to college and plays football in college, right? It's the same thing. You know, you're playing youth bands, right? When you're a kid, then you go to high school and you play in high school and then you go to college and you play in college and they just get bigger and bigger and you explore more and you get better. And that's essentially what it is. Like you are on the same track as any other person who's trying to get better at their craft. It's just a little bit different. And I don't know. I think it only benefits you. And you can tell when you put your music together, like when you listen to your produced records, you can tell that you've been doing it for a while. It's not like something that you just pieced together and said, okay, F it. Let's see what happens. I don't know. I think that's cool. I think it's important. So.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think for better, for worse, if you listen to my like records, they've gotten better over time.
Which is what you want.
Which is what you want, but it's like there's some artists that are just good straight out of the gate. You know, sure. The first record kicks ass, and then like 20 records after that are incredible.
And those are God-given talents that not everyone, most people don't have. So I'm with you. I mean, I get it. I totally understand where you're coming from. And you know, some of us would love to be the next George Strait, where everything that comes out of their mouth is straight gold, but right. It's just not always going to happen. And it's probably not usually going to happen. So it's important to recognize that you're growing and that you're, you know, evolving as a musician. And that leads me into this record that I want to talk about. It's called Close. It came out in, I believe, August, I think, if I'm correct there.
Yeah, I think so.
I think August of this year, if I'm right. It is 10 songs. It's really cool. If you like a groovy 70s rock sound with some Western thrown in there and a little bit of blues too. There's all these sounds when I listen to it that I think are really, really cool. It's super soothing. It's great. It's actually great music for vinyl. I don't know if you ever thought about that, but when I listen to it, all I think about is the fact that it would sound really cool on vinyl. But I want to know, there's a story behind it that I think is really cool that I know nothing about. This part of it, I'm totally transparent with telling you that I am not knowledgeable in this subject. So I want to learn about it. I want you to tell me. You funded this record totally off crypto, right?
Yeah.
Can you explain that whole world to me? Because I don't, and there, I promise you, there's a lot of other people listening to this that probably don't get it either. I mean, there's definitely people that do, but there's definitely people that don't. So if you can kind of give us a little bit of a background about how this all transpired, now you even got into all this. That'd be cool.
Totally. Yeah. So, I mean, I've always been interested in tech, and crypto arrived on the scene maybe in 2010. And I started investing in 2015, 2016, but you know, like every musician sort of faces, how are they going to fund the next record?
Yeah.
So my last record, I funded it with a Kickstarter.
Okay.
And it was great. First studio record, went really well for where I was at. Super excited. The Kickstarter is like a tremendous amount of work. I don't know if you've ever done one, but
I have never done one, but I know that they're a lot of work.
It's like It's not easy. It's a full-time gig and they're super fun, but you're basically like going to all your friends and family nonstop and saying, give me money.
Yeah. Which doesn't roll over very well.
Yeah, exactly. So you can do it once, but you can't, you really can't do it twice.
Yeah.
You can't be like, hey, give me money again.
So I was hey, cousin Billy, I need a few extra bucks for this next record. Can you really help me out? No, it doesn't work that way.
He's like, hell no. I gave you everything I had on the last. But yeah, so I started all the money I was making playing gigs, getting tips. I was busking, playing out, playing breweries all the time. And I would take that money, I would invest in cryptocurrency. And yeah, and then obviously crypto started becoming more popular and the market started taking off and kind of my little nest egg gave me enough money to fund a new record. So I wrote these songs and they were ready to go and I was really excited about them and it felt like a new kind of genre and world that I was entering. And it was like, I got three options. You know, I could go beg a record company for money, which probably isn't going to happen. It would take forever. Probably isn't going to happen. I could do another Kickstarter.
Not ideal.
not ideal. Yeah. Or I could take this crypto and invest and really use it to kind of fund my dream and invest in myself.
Sure.
So that's exactly what happened and paid the musicians in crypto and financed. We recorded it here in a studio in LA, super famous studio in LA. And we call it Crypto Country, you know, first country record funded by cryptocurrency. So
now that's so cool. But here's my thing. It's like, we got to backtrack just a little bit. And I know that I may be, I might be the dumb one here. And I fully, you know, I probably am. But, and like my brother knows all about this stuff. So he's probably, if he is listening, he's probably like, dude, you sound so stupid. But like, what is, obviously there's like a crypto coin, right? Like that's like the lowest, like that's, isn't that the base? Like, isn't a coin like a base of cryptocurrency, or am I wrong there? Like, is there a crypto dollar? Like how does it all, I don't get it. I honestly don't get it. And I'm really interested to know about it, which is why I thought this idea was so cool. It's like, what does cryptocurrency translate into like a US dollar? Like, how does that, make sense? I don't even know what that makes sense.
Yeah. I think the easiest one to get into is the easiest one to get into is Bitcoin, right? That's the biggest one and probably the most safe one.
Sure.
It's not the greatest time to talk about Bitcoin because it's down right now, actually. Yeah. And it was way up in the past. But, you know, right now, one Bitcoin, I think, is like $19,000 or $16,000 or something crazy. Like that. And I think the easiest way to think about it is it's digital gold. So if you go and buy, like people buy jewelry, people buy gold. Okay, what is gold? Well, gold is this mineral that somebody digs up out of the ground. And the reason it's valuable is because it's very rare.
Yeah.
And we all, as a society, agree that it's really rare and valuable, right? And so Bitcoin is basically, it's mined. It's a computer program that's working on a mathematical equation, just to kind of nerd out for a little bit.
Please nerd out, go all the way.
So you have all these computers that are working on a mathematical equation. They're digging, they're mining, right? Just like you would go and put your shovel in the ground and dig out some gold. Mm-hmm. And then over time, because of that work that they've done on that equation, they're given an amount of Bitcoin.
Cool.
Basically a small amount of that gold. And it's rare because there's a limited amount of it in the world. It'll run out. Basically, like over time, the amount of Bitcoin goes down and the equation, it all ends itself. So just like gold on a gold chain, it's mined. It's basically like there's labor involved. It's dug out of the ground, right? It's rare. And then there's this other element that we all socially agree that it's valuable, and that kind of creates some of the value there too. So
it's electronically mined, and right, like essentially it's like tech money. Does that make, I guess, does that even make sense? I don't even know.
Yeah, it's a great way to think about it. It's electronically mined. It's basically like, you know, now we're going to really nerd out, but it's...
I'm okay with it. Honestly, I'm interested because I seriously have no idea. Up to this point, I had no idea what it was. So I'm very interested.
Yeah. So let's say like you go to Mexico, right? Mexico has a native currency to Mexico, a peso.
Right.
When you travel to the U.S., you have to convert, you know, whatever money you came into the U.S. with into dollars. So there's native currency to the United States.
Right.
Now, what's the native currency to the internet? Well, the internet's a space, just like these other countries are spaces.
Yeah.
And so eventually Bitcoin and crypto will be these kind of native currencies to the internet, where if you want to do business online, there's a good chance you're going to transact in Bitcoin or another crypto.
Yeah.
Because that's the means of transaction and that's the currency that people want. So,
you can let's say you make, sorry, I sound so dumb, but I'm so interested. So like, let's say.
This is great, man.
Well, because it's cool that you made an entire record off of Bitcoin. And this is never, I've done 2.5 years of these every single week. I've done 100 and almost 30 of straight episodes, never taking a break. And I have never once had this conversation. And I think that it's cool. It's very cool. So essentially, if you say one Bitcoin, right, is whatever you say, $16,000, somewhere between $16,000 and $19,000, right? So can you bring, like, how do you get that Bitcoin and make that U.S. currency money? Like, how does that?
Yeah, that's where it gets tricky. it's tricky because, like, you know, and right now where we're at in 2022, people want dollars.
Right.
So not everything is on kind of like this future world that we're talking about where we transact in cryptocurrencies and these currencies that are native to the internet. So if you want to go from Bitcoin into the dollar, you got to put it on an exchange.
Okay.
And there's different types of exchanges like Coinbase,
right.
Gemini. There's all these exchanges out there. And so then after you accumulate, you know, a certain amount of crypto, and let's say you want to convert them into dollars, you can go on those exchanges just like you would for in the stock market. And then you could sell, hey, I'm going to cash out my Bitcoin today for X number of dollars.
So essentially when you made this record, right, when you made these 10 songs and you said, I'm going to pay the musicians and I'm going to pay the producer and I'm going to pay these people in Bitcoin, you were giving them like an investment, right? That they didn't have to translate into US dollar. They could keep, right? And would it gain value over time or lose value, but hopefully gain, right?
Hopefully gain. That's right. Yeah.
So when you were handing them, like, let's say I played guitar on the record or something, and you said, hey, Kyle, you get one Bitcoin. That's not definitely not what you gave people, but let's just say for the lack of my small brain, you gave me one Bitcoin. I'm going to hold on to that Bitcoin because eventually that Bitcoin maybe will double or triple or quadruple. And like, that's kind of what you want, right?
1000%. Yeah. So you could hold on to it like a stock or an investment for 10 years from now, 50 years from now, maybe that one Bitcoin's like $1 million.
Cool. I think I get it.
Yeah.
I think I get it. And honestly, I think you explained it really well because I've had people try and explain it before. And I'm like, listen, I don't claim to be really smart, but I know I'm not stupid. I'm somewhere in between. And this just not registering in my head. So it's just not going to work for me. But I think that it's really cool that you decided to do that because I think you're one of the few, if not the only one who decided at first, who decided, hey, I'm going to give this a shot. I think that's really cool that you did. And it's very thinking ahead. And the fact that you took you seem like a really smart guy. The fact that you took your passion for, you know, this cryptocurrency and the tech world and finance and music and kind of morphed into one. I think that's awesome. I think that, you know, there's a lot of people that try and do that and it doesn't work. And I'm glad that kind of worked for you. And you got this product that you, at the end of the day, you can look in your actual bank account and say, hey, I didn't spend all this money, but I kind of did something cool with investments here. And I think that's awesome. So congratulations. I think the project's great. And I really want to dive into it a little bit here. Something that really stuck out to me. I am a sucker. And I always have been a sucker for songs that reference other artists or songs that said artists enjoys, because I think that it is a direct look into what their life was or is prior to making their own music. Right. One of my favorite songs on this record is I Belong to You. I think that's a great song. I love it. I don't know. When I listen to music and I listen to full projects, there's always that one song that ropes me in. And I'm not saying I didn't have it before song 7 or song 8, but once I heard that song, I was like, whoa, like this is cool for me. Because part of the reason why I think that's really cool is you're telling a straight story. I mean, everything here is you're telling a story, but for some reason in this song personally, and I'm sure that there are people that think if they listen to I Can Fly or, you know, Bad for Good, like they can probably relate to that. But for me, you reference a story from start to finish. And one of the lines and the, I guess the verse that I love is, let me see, George and John gonna make it right. Paul played with his left hand and Yoko tried to join the band. Ringo wrote my favorite tunes. Oh, I Belong to You. And like you're referencing the Beatles, right? Which I think is cool because I grew up on the Beatles and you know, I had all this, you know, my dad had all the CDs and we listened to it in the car and all this stuff. And I have a ton of their records on vinyl now and whatever else. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of songwriters that are songwriters now because, you know, Paul, John, George, and Ringo paved the way for them all. Whether you say that the Beatles are the greatest rock band of all time or not, that's a straight fact that they paved the way for everyone. So I think that that is really cool. You tell a straight story. And I'm, you know, are the Beatles, is that a huge influence on you? I'm going to assume that they are, unless it was just like made sense for the song, which is totally fine too. But is that a huge influence for you or no?
Yeah, 1000%. I mean, I love the Beatles. You know, going into the record, like, I was super inspired by Tom Petty, Jackson Brown, that kind of Fleetwood Mac, the radio rock. Mm-hmm. But the Beatles like have been this thing through, I don't know if it was this way for you, but like discovered them in high school, then kind of dropped them, then rediscovered them in college, went deep into John Lennon's solo work, then kind of dropped them. It seems like every 3 or 4 years, they bring me back in. Yep. The songs are absolutely incredible. So many different genres, so many different vibes. They had so much life and like love, you know, in those songs. And so
do you think that it takes a certain maturity level to really understand what the Beatles are trying to do? Because I and seriously, like I'm not kidding, because there's a ton of people that I am friends with that say the Beatles aren't all that good. And listen, I understand when you listen to their music that what you're listening to is not nearly as close to what you listen to today. But without the Beatles, you don't have what you're listening to today. So I think it's an absolute BS conversation. I'm not saying that the Beatles are my favorite band of all time. I can name you 5 or 6 more that I like better. But you don't have those bands without those 4 guys. And that's a fact. So I truly think that it takes a certain maturity level to understand the deepness and the depth of these songs and what they put out. I mean, there's a lot of not so incredible songs, but there's a lot of really great songs. So do you agree with me in terms of the maturity level of listening to Beatles?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I agree on both. I'd make the argument that both things are true, that like, A, they paved the way for everything that came after them.
Yeah.
There's kind of like no rock and roll and really no singer-songwriting tradition without the Beatles.
Yeah.
There are a few groups before that, but they were the ones who made it mainstream.
Sure.
And then I think they are one of the greatest bands. I agree with you that I don't know if they're the greatest, but I think if you're building a top five, top 10 list, like,
dude, yes,
those songs, 100%. Those songs.
Oh, I would never say that they don't. I mean, my music integrity gets thrown in the garbage if I say that, but I mean, you know, if you look at numbers, right, like they're up there. They are. And that they very well could be one. But the problem is that their stuff is so much different from what we hear today or what we even heard 20 years after that, that people have a hard time saying, like, that's it, right? People have a really tough time because everything evolved and, you know, they weren't the greatest singers ever, but they are the greatest songwriters ever. And unless you are, if you are listening to music to hear the greatest voices ever, then of course you're not going to say that. But if you're like you and I who are listening to music to hear great voices, but also hear great songwriting, then you have a different opinion, right? Yeah.
That's 100%.
Yeah. I mean, I love them. I do. And I'll never not say that. And I had someone tell me once, Mitch, I had someone tell me once, they said, Cobb, the Beatles suck. And I looked right at them and I said, dude, you suck. You have no idea what you're talking about. You have no idea. You take the amount of music the Beatles put out in there, for lack of a, for in retrospect, they weren't together that long. If you look at bands today, they really weren't. It was a very short amount of time. And if you look at the amount of one hits that they had, two, just their numbers in terms of billboards and charts and all this stuff. And then you just look at the fact that they put out, let's say they put out a record of 15 songs. Each guy wrote two or three songs. That's fucking unbelievable. That is not normal today. So that's why I throw the argument out there. I don't think that it's even a question. Paul McCartney, John Lennon, Ringo Starr, and George Harrison are the four greatest songwriters of all time. And everyone else follows them. That's just me. Sorry.
I love it, man. The songs still hit. You know, I play breweries and wineries all over California. And as part of that, I obviously play my own songs, but I play covers.
Sure.
And I play Let It Be.
Okay, cool.
And Never Ceases to Kill. Like, boomers obviously love it.
Boomers.
But then, you know, people who are like 20 and 30 and even people in their teens know those songs. And that
everyone does.
Everyone does. They're like standards. Yes. And they're also really good. Like, yes, they're insanely good songs, great melodies, great lyrics. And they still hit, man. And that's like a 60-year-old song.
My favorite part about Let It Be is Paul McCartney told a story once. The reason why he wrote Let It Be was because he was sleeping one night and he had a dream. His mother passed away and he had a dream and she was in the dream. And she said, Paul, just let it be. Just let it be. And then he went out and he wrote the song. He woke up, like cold woke up and wrote the song. And that was it, which I think is super powerful and pretty cool. What is your favorite Beatles song of all time, I must ask?
Hey Jude.
Okay. Do you know the story about Hey Jude?
I don't.
Hey Jude was written. I should just keep my mouth shut. Hey Jude was written because John Lennon had a son, or has a son named Julian.
Yeah.
When John Lennon and his first wife split up and he started like dating Yoko, Julian was not all that happy. I mean, who would be? But I guess it was written because Paul said, you know, it was basically a letter to Julian saying it's all going to be all right. But he just changed the name because it just flowed better. So it's actually for John Lennon's son, which I think is kind of cool in its own right. And that's a timeless one too, right? Like, who doesn't know Hey Jude? Who doesn't know Hey Jude? Yeah. And I'm a big Blackbird guy. That's my favorite Beatles song of all time.
That's a great song. George Harrison wrote that one, right?
Yeah. Yes, he did. And I think it's the guitar lick in the beginning. And I think that it's the simplicity of the song that makes it so great. Because it's simple, but also so deep at the same time. And I think that that's the coolest part for me. And like, listen, again, like if you played Blackbird at a brewery, right? No one's going to be like, they're not going to whip their head around and be like, whoa. But someone's going to be sitting there and say, holy shit, this guy's good. Like, he knows what he's doing. I think that that's the power of the Beatles. And I think that's the power of music.
That documentary, have you seen the recent Beatles documentary?
I did. Did you like it?
No, I haven't checked it out. And I'm a big Beatles fan and I still haven't seen it.
It's very different. It's not, it's like literally they basically propped a camera up and then just like filmed their, like a lot of their interactions, rehearsing and going on tour and all this stuff. It's super raw. And I think that's why it's so good. You see fights, you see guys walk out, and the entire time you see Yoko just like kind of hovering in the back. And the whole time I'm sitting there, I'm like, why didn't anyone just tell her to get out? Like, why didn't anyone just tell her to leave? She's just sitting there. And I saw a tweet when it first came out and someone was like, man, we are literally single-handedly watching Yoko break out the Beatles, because you knew that all the little tensions was because she was like hovering over them and none of them liked it. It was so funny. I recommend it. You should watch it.
I will. I have to check it out. I've been wanting to, it's my favorite. It's the Let It Be sessions. Is Let It Be sessions?
Yeah. I think that's what it's called. I'm pretty sure.
Dope.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I recommend it. I do. I think that it's a cool little insight for the most part, a band that we didn't know much personally about, because again, they didn't last very long and there's not like there was cameras on top of them during stuff like that. So it's cool that it's like a little bit intimate and you can kind of dive into their stuff and figure out kind of who they were as humans as well as musicians. And I always think, and that's why I do stuff like this, is that I think that, you know, if someone's out there listening to this episode and they think who you are as a person is awesome, right? They're more inclined to go listen to your projects and want to kind of dive deeper into who you are as an artist and musician. And that's why I started this, because that's what I wanted to do. That and the fact that I just wanted to geek out about music and I had no one to talk to it about. You know, Mitch, when someone listens to this project, when someone listens to this collection, this 10 songs, what do you want them to get out of it? Like, what is the takeaway that you want people to have after they listen to this? What do you want them to know about Mitch Bradford?
The vibe of the record, or what I want them to take away, is a zest for life. Like, music makes life exponentially 10x more fun.
Shit, damn straight.
And we should be like really grateful for it, but also just embrace it to the max and kind of like suck all the juice out of it. You know, music is just that good.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're trying to get at on the record, is especially that front end of the record is like very high vibe radio rock.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to capture that feeling of when you first listened to a song that you knew you were going to love, like that kind of unbelievable feeling it creates inside of you, that excitement, that zest for life. And that's really what the record is about.
Yeah. You know what? I appreciate that, because, you know, I'm not going to lie, when I first listened to this project at the top of it, I mean, you are straight telling a story that seems like your goal from the top, and you focus so much on that. And by the time you get to the bottom of it, you recognize how good it is. But if you only listen to one song, there's a lot of people out there that only listen to one song off from an artist, and that might not be their whole story. And you listen to something like this, and I mean, the first song on the damn album is More Than Life, right? Like you are literally telling people that music is so important to you, and that this is what you want to do. And I think that from 1 to 10, you're telling that story and you're telling them how important music is to people's lives. And that's why we sit here, right? Like, it is something that I intake every single day as much as I possibly can. And when I can't, I wish I could. And I love that you have that mindset and that's how you approach your own music, because I think that if you don't do that and you're doing it for another reason, you're not doing it the right way. So kudos to you. Kudos on this record. Thank you for making it. And, you know, thank you for kind of going outside the box and doing something that you really believed in. And seriously, I mean it. So I think that's awesome. And, you know, if you're listening to this right now, you haven't listened to it, go listen to this album, go listen to it from 1 to 10, then tell me what your favorite song is. And do not go on iTunes and listen to a little 15 seconds of it. Listen to the whole damn thing. It's going to take you 44 minutes. You got 44 minutes, I promise. So go listen to it and just enjoy it. And, appreciate what it stands for and who Mitch is as a guy and as an artist. So there's my spiel. I think it's fantastic. Congratulations, brother.
Appreciate it, dude. I think you nailed the themes of the record. So you said it better than I could. So
I don't know about that. I don't know about all that. I think that you did a great job and I love it. And I will do nothing but promote it more. So congratulations. I think that's great. And thanks for coming to hang out with me, dude. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I think we hit all the great topics in life, you know, New Jersey, crypto and country music.
Crypto and country music, baby. I love it. I love it. Everybody, you can go follow Mitch on Instagram at @MitchBradford_. And go listen to his record Close. It's out now. Go stream it, go share it with your friends and do all the great things. Like we say, spread the love, spread the music. And that's most important. If you are Mitch, you know where you're playing. If someone out there is in California and wants to catch you in a show, or if you're leaving California, going elsewhere, do you know if you're playing anywhere soon where someone can come catch you play?
Yeah. Like December 7th, December 8th, we're actually down in San Diego.
Cool.
Going to do four different breweries and wineries down there. So if you're in San Diego, we'll be at like San Diego 5050s and Negociant Winery. And just go to MitchBradford.com or check me out on Instagram. It'll all be posted there.
Awesome. And if you're listening to this right now, those shows would be the coming week. So if you're listening to this, I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving. It's important to say. And go catch Mitch at a show and do all the great things and enjoy him. And he's phenomenal. And I think that you would think the same way that I do. And I think that he's great. So everybody, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Remember Country Music Podcast. Remember to rate, subscribe, give us 5 stars if you love the episode, and follow us on Instagram at @RCM_podcast. New episodes come out every Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Central, wherever you listen to pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, it's there. Just type in Remember Country Music and go share us with your friends and do all the good things. Everybody, thank you for tuning in to another episode of the RCM Podcast. I'm Kyle Corbless. That's Mitch Bradford. See you next week. Bye-bye.